day about 25 years from now, when we've all grown old from a wondering how, we'll all sit down at the city dump and talk about the good old days. Oh, you'll pass a joint and I'll pass a wine, and anything good from a down the line. A lot of good things went down one time back in the good old days. Yeah, the good old days are past and gone. A lot of good people are done, gone, gone. That's my life when I sing this song about back in the good old days. Sometimes we get to thinking that we're almost done, and there ain't nothing left that we can figure out. And I guess it must have seemed a lot more like that back in the good old days. But when you gotta go, you gotta go. There's always somebody, don't you know? I hang around a saying, well, I told you so. Back in the good old days. Yeah, the good old days are past and gone. A lot of good people are done, gone, gone. Oh, that's my life when I sing this song about back in the good old days. Oh, we'll all join hands and we'll gather round when that old guitar starts to make that sound. A lot of good things went down, down, down.
Testing. Testing. Testing.
You are testing, Casey. You're on the air.
All right.
We're live and direct. It's Casey Piscura and Cody Lee pushing the buttons over here for another episode of... Right now, it's just the annex of... Farm Talk. We'll get there eventually with an official name, I think. But we are all grateful to Sarah and Bud for getting this show going for the last couple years, and we're gonna try our best to carry on the torch and talk about farming and gardening with you in our local area. What's up, Casey?
Excited, especially with all this rain we're getting. And all the beautiful gardens I'm seeing around town, there's a lot of enthusiasm. And excited to cover some topics, get fired up as harvest is among us.
That's great, man. Yeah, the weather has been somewhat unusual. It was a spectacular wet spring. I know that last time we were here a month ago, it was very mild. Things were weeks behind. We were talking about that. Or planting potatoes and whatnot much later than most years. And all of a sudden, I don't know for how many days now, we have this sort of early monsoon feeling.
Yeah, well, I mean, what I was really was blown away with was, okay, cold and moist. Then really hot for early June, which kind of kicked everything into gear a little bit,
which is,
you know,
I tend to think is normal, is like no matter how snowy and freezing May would have been, that on June 1st, it's like someone flipped on a switch and it's 90 degrees and hot and windy every day. But we've had a reprieve.
Yeah. And then I guess the word on the street was, the jet stream dropped down, brought cold, and I think that kick-started a lot of this monsoonal energy. It's just cool enough, moist enough, with all the pastures are moist, the forests are moist. I'm hearing word of oyster mushrooms fruiting, and thus I think we're in this kind of micro-hydrologic cycle that I think we should all be paying more attention. I mean, the micro hydrologic cycle, everybody out there, that's going to be something we'll all talk about.
Micro hydrologic?
Well, the micro hydrologic cycle makes the micro hydrologic cycle kick into gear. And we've been definitely enjoying that out on the ranch.
So I want to hear more about that micro hydrologic. Like, that's like... you know, I've looked at the radar quite a bit in the last couple of months, and it does seem to just kind of be kind of, you watch these clouds of moisture just kind of like kicking out of Utah or something and hitting the Rocky Mountains here in Colorado, and all of a sudden creating these bursts of moisture. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, the more that people are studying kind of where moisture and storms are born, and it's coming down to more association with certain more of a micro areas that are moist, create lift, such as, you know, every evening when we have the shady parts of the canyons start to have that cool air sinking down the creeks, and that creek air can run into kind of hotter, moist air out in the valleys and push that air up. And when it cools enough, it can blow up into storms, of which are gifts to cool you in an afternoon, and the afternoon heat, as well as just to contribute to the soil moisture, I think, that is blanketing the valley right now, creating a sacred humidity that protects us from extremes.
And at least for 15, 20 years that we've been around in the Roaring Fork Valley on the western slope, we see these typically come around the 4th of July or so, kind of stick around until the beginning of August, of these late afternoon thunderstorms. You know, the day will start hot and sunny, and then all of a sudden the clouds start to build up in the afternoon, and it's happening every day now for the last week. And it is, I've intentionally left up the blinds here where we're looking out to the west, and there's these fat drooping gray clouds coming in from the west as we speak.
Yeah, I was feeling that fresh air blowing in the truck window on the way here, but it started raining and I had to roll them up. So it really is a blessing. I think for me, it gives me a lot of hope that our decision making and land management is starting to have some positive effects. And, you know, hopefully these trends can continue, because at least as far as my plants go, they're starting to look really good as what I call a critical point of influence, where if they're well fed, they're about to grow at peak.
So your plants that are outside of greenhouses and whatnot, are you seeing any anomalies or sort of different things that you've seen in compared to other seasons?
You know, I think this time of year is harder on the farmer to just kind of look at what you got to, what you didn't get to, what's kind of showing its head as trouble. So we're kind of buttoning up our ambitions and then focusing on, okay, what's observable for this season. So we've got a little bit more pressure from flea beetles and some more leaf miners on chard and the chard family. And
what are leaf miners?
They're like little kind of I think Lepidoptera type of like worms that kind of eat in the leaves and in between the, like, I guess on the vascular, you know, in between the ribs of the plants. And we've got that pretty heavy, so we're trying to address that while looking into the start of big time fruit fill and things of that nature.
Cool. As far as insects, I guess it's a little bit different of a season. We didn't have as long of a really dry, hot spell as we usually do in June. And I'm kind of associating that with, I have a lot more snails. And that's what I just noticed yesterday out in the garden, really like defoliating legumes, like a whole row of scarlet runner beans, like that they're just like down to the veins and the stems. And, you know, I have hope that they'll come back. And there's a plant, like every few plants, there's one that hasn't been affected as much. But I noticed a lot more snails than I would usually see this time of year. And it's like, well, you go from a very, like, a cool, wet spring, and then just all of a sudden monsoons in a couple of weeks, and it's been pretty wet at nighttime for those snails.
Yeah, well, I think this is a good time for, if anybody wants to call in with, I think we're going to talk a little bit about pest issues and what we can do as far as strategies to go. Maybe Cody can give us the digits here to call in.
Yeah, definitely. We would love to hear from all of you, from any kind of comments you have on the land or questions, concerns. The studio line is 970-963-2976. And I always love this quote from Bill Mollison, who wrote the manual, the permaculture manual, like in the 1970s from New Zealand. He said, "You don't have a snail problem, you just have a duck deficiency."
That's why we got into ducks for a little while. But yeah, I think what we're watching too is that it just didn't really get deep cold this winter. So I think we have a lot of overwintering.
Oh, that's true as well, yeah.
That's leading to things. But I think what I really want, what's really been turning me on lately, is the fact that one way to deal with insects what's been turning me on a lot lately is one way to deal with insects is to try to have plants with the utmost nutritional fortitude, thus giving them immunity. And I think we're about to see a phenomenon that helps with that. Any guesses what that might be?
Well, no, Casey. I just wanted to add to that insects are often a flag for some sort of deficiency in the plant and its nutrition or something. And it's always a stressed out plant that's just going to draw in the disease and insects. And yeah, I mean, I haven't had the flea beetle thing happen so much yet because I was so late on tomatoes or potatoes or whatever. We have a lot of tomatoes that are like still out in pots that if we wait any longer, well, I'm not going to be feeling pitiful if they're just totally eaten up by flea beetles because they're stressed out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I guess what I was alluding to is the fact that right now, those of us that are watering from the rivers, the rivers are still raging. They're still quite cold. And thus, when we water plants, it's quite a shock to the system.
Oh.
Drop in the soil temperature. When soil temperature drops, it slows the biologic activity of the soil down. And when that happens, you can get nutrients deficiencies that then make the plants susceptible to insects and diseases. So, you know, right now, I think we have, as the rivers drop, we're going to see water temps rise and suddenly the popping of the plants and also the fortitude of them to these diseases and insects just surely on temperatures of the soil.
That is fascinating. Yeah. And man, I mean, I'm just like a hobby home gardener. Unlike Casey here on the big farm up the road. And I'm still like dipping a watering can into a barrel of rainwater to water my potted plant, like my tomatoes and stuff out there. But man, the Rockford ditch flowing from the Crystal River into Satink is ice cold. Like I can stick my arm in it for a few seconds to dig out a clog or something before my bones are burning, you know. And I don't doubt that that's quite shocking for plants.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what we're just pondering is how can we overcome the cold water, either through making some type of a foliar fertility regiment, where we're either making these sprays ourselves or doing things that help give the plants a nutritional burst until the soil can supply the rest.
And are you doing that? Are you doing a foliar spray now?
We are working to make it a regular thing. It's kind of always been aspirational, but at the same time, it's becoming ever more apparent the necessity for a foliar regimen to then kickstart off the real production season.
And what's your ideal spray for a foliar regimen?
Well, so we're starting to look at ways of testing plants that are perennial trouble. So arugula and flea beetles seems to be one of them. Hmm. Chard, early blight of tomatoes when they're really sown early. And so what we've started to look at is doing a test known as a sap analysis. And it ultimately takes the sap from inside the plant, and you can send it off and get actually a snapshot of the nutrition that's in the sap.
Wow.
It's not a cheap test. We actually don't have a lab in the United States to test it, so the procedure is
go to Russia or something. No.
You have to pack the harvest the plants before 9, put them on in a chill pack, overnight it to Ohio and then to Crop Health Labs in Ohio, and then they overnight it to the Netherlands.
Wow.
But it's known as the test, because what it may show up is like just based on our soil temps, perhaps our water and our parent rock materials that are in our area, that we always have molybdenum that's deficient, or something along, magnesium or something of that nature. That gives us the starting point of, okay, what plants are dynamic bioaccumulators of said deficient? And so, our forbs especially, but all plants, but definitely forbs, also known as weeds by some people, but
forbs?
Yeah, just useful plants.
I've never heard that term, Casey, of calling them forbs. I like that.
And things like comfrey, nettles, borage, other wild plants and things like horsetail and wild tips of plants that mm-hmm. you then ferment until it's like sweet and a titch stinky. Not too stinky is my thought, but I've seen people take it further than that. And then, we'll combine that fermented plant juice with a minimally turned compost, preferably with plants growing on it, and then a horizon from wild areas of just soil, and then spray that onto the plants.
Let's take a pause right there and invite any of you listeners out there to chime in, ask questions. You're into building your own fertilizers or chopping and dropping, or what kind of insects are going on in your garden right now and how to manage those, give us a call at 970-963-2976. We're here to answer you.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I mean, like, call in, folks, because we can talk through it. Because, I mean, every year, at least for us, there's something that we're having to look at and say, well, this isn't going as planned. What can we do?
Yeah, and that was a perfect segue, Casey, because I definitely wanted to talk about making your own fertilizers, what kinds of amendments that we're bringing onto our lands. And I think it's absolutely fascinating about the so-called dynamic accumulator kind of plants, and that they can, you know, kind of convert these elements in the earth and bring them up into their tissues. And we can just simply, like, what's called chop and drop of, like, just sickling it down and mulching out some beds with it or something, or putting them in barrels of water and fermenting them. And with or without oxygen, you know, both ways are acceptable. What do you know about that?
Well, I mean, I think we're experimenting with mainly not using oxygen. I think not because we're adverse to it. It's more of like, how simple can we make the process, rather than, you know, we were using actively aerated or using like a jacuzzi bubbler to try to get, you know, blooms in certain bacteria. So now it's like, you know, we at least in our method, start with the fermented plants and then do that until we get the stinky, but not too stinky, sweet. I don't know how to explain it. It's like 3 days, probably.
I know what you mean, man. Comfrey will, like, anaerobic 3 to 4 days in the summer. And go onto YouTube or whatever and look it up. And people are doing it all over the world, especially in Europe. There's a ton of videos on just putting some comfrey and water in a bucket and covering it up for a few weeks even. I'll talk about my personal experiences that I like to use mostly comfrey and a lot of nettles, of stinging nettles as well, and then throw in a little bit of yarrow or dandelions. And horsetail isn't even that high up right now. I'll definitely do like a specific batch with horsetail. And I don't get that obsessive about if it's being aerated or not, but I do have like a little aerator with two hoses and the little stone bubbler things that I drop in the bottom of a 55 gallon bucket. And even like a new moon to a full moon, about 2 weeks or something, to get the batch, like, and it if it's aerated, it doesn't get that stinky, but the comfrey has a very special stink to it.
I just love it. I mean, I'll visit it daily and then squeeze the materials, and it's like, it helps like heal my hands.
I was about to say that. Have you ever felt something like, all of you like people into fancy lotions or whatever, I've never felt something so healing to the tissues of my hands ever.
And then, you know, it's observable pretty quickly when you know, we're mainly doing this as foliar. We'll also do it as a root drench, especially in damaged soils. What we're finding is there's arbuscular mycorrhizae and bacteria living in these plants. So healthy plants, tips of growing plants in the wild places, when you take those off and you ferment them, the biology from those areas are inside the plants. And so when applied foliarly, you get some inoculation as well, but then root drenches, you can help evolve the soils away from maybe some issues from, you know, monocultures that you have to create sometimes in gardens just to be organized, or the fact that, you know, your tomato that you planted is from, maybe, hopefully it's from here, the seed, because it has a little bit of a leg up, but if not, it's from, you know, some warm California climate, and it's not creating that many root exudates. So your biology that's in the soil doesn't have a lot to eat. So you're helping evolve that soil back to a diverse rate. So when those plants start to really produce a lot of root exudates, they're ready to go. And that's what is going to happen right now. When the warmth of the rivers comes up, the plants are about ready to really explode. And I think this is a really important time of what or a key point of influence for those plants to have enough cover over the soil and a lot of energy, because they're going to turn a ton of carbon into food for you.
Yeah. If you just tuned in, Casey Pascura and I are talking about, especially in the last little bit, about dynamic accumulator plants. And we actually have a caller on air. We'll see if the phones are working. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, big up the Buddha spots. Thank you for spreading the knowledge. Hey, thank you for not being paranoid of anaerobic compost tea. A lot of people are so worried that they have to keep everything bubbling because the anaerobic stuff's going to kill everything. Could you say more about that? And also this thing about dynamic accumulators. If we don't have access to that fancy test, that test you were talking about in the Netherlands, then how about some of them plants you was talking about, comfrey, nettles, borage, because they got all the stuff in them, right? They get this broad range of nutrients.
It's the ancient technology of planet Earth that's been evolving for millions of years. And yeah, we don't have to make it in a fancy factory in the city to feed our plants, because plants have been doing it for millions of years. And yeah, like plants like comfrey have very, very deep roots and go deep below the subsoil and are highly concentrated in things like potassium and silicon. And yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
Well, I think, you know, where, you know, what AD is getting to is just mixtures of things and not being afraid of the plants. I mean, really, like, there's, I think, very, very few plants that you can ferment that will, like, be super detrimental, you know? And for the most part, especially if they're grown in, you know, a lush kind of moist area with other plants growing around them, that they're not allelopathic, and mixtures of things will ultimately get mixtures of dynamic nutrients.
And folks, these plants, you don't really have to try hard to grow them. Things like comfrey, nettles, amaranth, known as pigweed, dandelions, red clover has one of the highest concentrations of iron. Horsetail grows as a weed all along waterways and ditches. The highest plant in silicon dioxide, that is commonly known as quartz in the soil. Alfalfa is super high in nitrogen and iron. And of course, yarrow has the old traditional NKP, the nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus that is traditionally put on our old fertilizer bags to tell us, you know, that's what we need to be worrying about the most. But it is highly concentrated in a weed called yarrow that's growing all around us in your yards. And yarrow is also high in copper.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, when we actually understand these plants, it gives us a lot more respect for them, which is really, really important.
Yeah, so I would highly encourage you to grow what Casey called forbs earlier, and commonly known as weeds, and let them be. And it's fun to kind of shape up your yard with a weed whacker or a lawnmower or something, but you know, the like flat green Kentucky bluegrass thing is kind of passe. It's kind of like a waste of time and resources as far as I'm concerned. And we could be doing a lot better things to kind of be growing more health and wealth for all of us on planet Earth. And without any further ado, Casey, thank you so much. We're going into My Own Two Hands now, hosted by Professor Yaya himself.
Get out there and grow some things, guys.